Well, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, good day. Welcome to our Big Book 12-Step Weekly Workshop. My name is Herb. I'm an alcoholic. This call is being recorded. Please join me in the revised set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my unmanageability, the 12 steps in you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my unmanageability, the 12 steps, and especially you. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. My intention today is to take us through the final phase of step three. To take a look at the answer to the question. The way I posed it last time, offering my interpretation of Bill's big book description of the approach to step three, was to take a look at pages 58 to 60 primarily as his warm-up to his sort of a preface, a foreword to the third step. And then he asks us the ABCs. And then he asks us two questions. What do we mean by that? Turning our will and our life over to the care of God. What do we mean by that? And what do we do? It's a similar literary style that we saw in step two on page 45. Said we need power. That's the lack of power is our dilemma. And he asks us two questions there at the beginning of the forward to, the introduction to step two. Well, where are we going to find that power and how are we going to find that power? And we navigated that material in chapter four, answering that question finally on page 55. These are not throwaway comments on my part. This is an effort to really delve deeply into an understanding of step three so that when we take step three next week, it will have a profound meaning to you at the very least, and it might even have some experience, which is what Bill suggests on page 63, and we'll get there today. In step two, we looked at our decision about power. My concept, that's the critical part. My concept, it's just a decision, a faith decision, an empty decision by all measurements. But what's my alternative? I've tried religion, I've tried psychology, I've tried self-help, I've tried school and learning. I've tried self-will. It does not only not work with regard to my addiction, it doesn't work with regard to my life. And this willingness, Bill says, to choose a power other than ourselves in blind faith, it really is. He doesn't say that. But he asks us on page 53, God is or God isn't, what is your choice? And he said, that willingness is the cornerstone on a spiritual arch through which we walk to a new freedom. It's a very important architectural analogy, which he's going to reinforce in step three. And we will talk about that tonight because it's literally referred to in pages 62 to 63. Step three, so misunderstood. We had a robust discussion last night about people's understanding or attitude or habit, conditioned response to step three, and they were using words that they actually didn't really understand, or they didn't know the meaning of, or they had just heard them repeated that they accepted them as true. And once I began confronting them with the meaning of the questions, they were like deer in headlights, which is a little bit of the experience we had last Tuesday, I believe, with people, and maybe more so tonight. Made a decision to turn. There's no surrender here. First of all, the word surrender is not in the big book. Not at all in the big book, pages 1 to 164. The word surrender is not to be found. Now, if I found it in step one, it would make sense. Complete defeat, I surrender. But in step three, look at it. Made a decision. That's an active role on my part, the use of my free will to turn. That's an active decision to move my feet in a direction, to move my attitude in a direction, to move my feelings in a direction, to turn. Well, now we get a little murky, our will and our lives. Well, what do we mean by that? And really, what do we do? Those are the two key questions Bill asks us that I prompted you with just a minute ago. But notice it does not say over to God. Please, this is not an accident. It says we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. That word is the central word that signals the grace part. The word turn, made a decision to turn, is the central word that signals the willingness part. Like step two, there's a mystery here, a connection between my willingness and action and grace. I can't explain it, I can only observe it. It's not this clear in the big book because Bill doesn't use this word, but it is clear when you read and understand the big book and Bill's models and analogies and metaphors. So I'm saying up front, and then I'll demonstrate later on in my comments why I've come to this use of this word. Step three is about a relationship. Step two is about a concept, my choice of a concept, my decision for a concept. Step two, an act of faith. Step three is my decision for a relationship. Bill said on page 55, this, whatever this power is, it's deep down inside of me. So therefore it's available to me. And I need to have a relationship with this power in order to deal effectively with my addiction, and then to deal effectively with my unmanageability. A relationship with power, and you get to choose what that means. The big book doesn't. It has some synonyms. It has some suggestions, some words, some phrases that you're welcome to use for step two and for step three. That's why I challenged you to challenge yourself with the question. What relationship do you yearn for? Oh, I love that word. It's a juicy word. Not in your head and not in your heart. Those are good. But I said in the bones, in your cellular structure, in the very soul of your soul, at the deepest possible level. That's the tension, that yearning that led you to your addiction, because you thought you could quell that yearning by alcohol, or you could satisfy that yearning by drugs, or you could complete yourself and have homeostasis, a very fancy word for balance, if you only had the proper relationship, enough money, enough reputation, enough physical beauty or power. And none of it ever works. I quoted Pascal in step two, and I'll do it again here in the context of what I just said. He's a philosopher, but what he said is a poetic, a mystical statement. The whole in us is in the shape of God, in the shape of this power, in the shape of this reality, whatever it is, this life force, this organismic life force. Step three, a decision for power. My relationship. I'm going to now, to next week, say a prayer in community all together. That's a commitment, a public witness commitment to my effort at steps four through nine. That's what step three is. There's no real action other than the prayer. There's an understanding. There's a decision. There's a commitment. There's a prayer. The decision is a commitment to do steps four through nine. Remember, it said on page 58, and we looked at it at the very beginning of our workshop 6 months ago. Are you willing to go to any length, and what does that mean? On page 58, we decided that we would go to any length. Dash. It talks about steps, finishing the steps, indicating the journey from step four through nine, the journey to freedom from addiction, the journey to freedom from unmanageability. I say it those two ways because it's about the first and the second half of step one. The minimum promise is freedom from addiction. That first half of step one, the maximum promise is the freedom from our unmanageability on a daily basis, as long as, in fact, we live this way of life, a life of principle, a life of consciousness, a life of compassion. Steps 10, 11, and 12. Bill says this is the keystone. The keystone, which is the building block at the very peak of the arch that holds the entire arch together. My own sponsor uses a different word. He's more mechanically oriented. He uses the word linchpin. It's a mechanical device that holds a lot of moving parts together. But Bill uses in the big book, staying with the spiritual arch through which we walk to a new freedom that he started on page 47. He uses the term keystone. Well, let's take a look at the big book. I mentioned that on page 60, he asks those two questions after the ABCs. Being convinced of the ABCs. In the same way, we asked at the end of unmanageability, are you convinced of the need for power? That's the foundation of this spiritual arch through which we walk to a new freedom. That we're willing to make this ambiguous faith decision in step two, and this huge commitment in step three to do steps four through nine. That we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood God. Just what do we mean and just what do we do? And I make the suggestion that pages 60 to 62 is the part that we looked at in unmanageability, a description of the underlying cause and condition of the bedevilments. Bill says on page 62 that selfishness, self-centeredness is the root That's what we mean. That we're extreme examples of self will run riot. That's what we mean. That we made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. That's what we mean. That our troubles are of our own making. That's what we mean. We must be rid of this selfishness. That's what we mean. Then he hammers us. God makes that possible. So he's going to tell us now, in the same way he told us to think about, ask yourself the question in step one and in step two. In step one, how are you doing? Are you powerless over your addiction? Are you powerless over your life? In step two, yes, we're asking you to make a decision, but do you really have the competency and the power and the adequacy to do that? And now in step three, he's intimating. Yes, you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. Do you have the power to do that? There often seems no way of entirely getting rid of this self without God's aid. He's setting the bar very high. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. We do what we don't want to do, and we don't do what we want to do. That was the bullseye target for unmanageability, wasn't it? But here's the nail in the coffin for step one, unmanageability. But it's worthwhile reminding us of that here, because it's the launching pad for step three. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. In the same way he framed addiction on page 43, there'll come a time and a place where we'll have no mental defense against our addiction. Here he's saying we have no, not just mental, we have no power over our self-centeredness. We can't even reduce it much by wishing or trying on our own power, hopeless and helpless. And yet, fully responsible. So this is the how and the why of it. Now on page 62, I'm beginning to look at some new material for us. Pages 60 to 62 was an answer to the question, what do we mean? Pages 62 and 63, the balance, is going to be an answer to what do we do? This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Oh yeah, that's what the bedevilments were all about. Me and my self-centeredness. The person suffering from the bedevilments, from this self-centeredness, not only believes that they are the center of their life, they believe that they are the center of the world. Maybe not consciously, but that's how we unconsciously operate. And you may not be convinced of that at this point, but the end of the fourth step, if you've never done one out of the big book, you will be convinced. Oh my God, I thought I was the center of the universe and that my script is what reality should be. And when it's not, I have justifiable anger or some other negative reaction because life is not living up to my expectations. That's the bottom line of step four. So he tells us why we need to quit playing God. Next sentence. He says, we need to quit playing God. It didn't work. Well, that's why we're here. So next, and here we are now going to take on some of the understanding of why I use the term relationship. We decided that hereafter in this drama of life, Bill loves the stage, the theater, that kind of drama. And I'll continue using that. It's a very helpful image and metaphor as we go through the various steps. God was going to be our director. Well, if God is our director, capital D, look at that. That's a synonym for higher power. What's the opposite? A director is related to an actor. Remember the example he used even in pages 60 to 62. the actor that wants to run the whole show. Next line. He is the principal. He gives us the opposite here. We are the agent, our relationship. Principal, capital P. The person in charge, the owner. Agent, the duly represented person who's given some power to represent the principal. God is the father and we are the children. Today it probably would be worded parent, just to neutralize it. But again, it's about a relationship. There's two more relationships, as I've seen them. On page 63, that second line, he says, we had a new employer. Oh, employer, employee. I've heard people say, my employer is God now. My real employer is God. So I'm here to serve God. Oh, I work for a living, but that's a second priority. It's never been my relationship, but I do understand it. It has lots of implications for a very healthy life. I'm talking about a healthy definition of a word, not something that has, because every word has the negative possibilities. And then in the next paragraph, page 63, there's another term, maker, in that second line. Many of us said to our maker, I don't actually like the word, so I use creator in my translation of it. It's the same word, maker of a pottery, creator of a pottery. but the opposite of maker is made, and of creator is created. So again, we're talking about a relationship. All right, so let's go back to page 62. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone. Well, what concept is that? Just have to ask myself, what's Bill talking about here? I think relationship. It's the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Freedom has two connotations. I want you to really embrace that, well, or at least understand the way I say it, whether you embrace it or not, that's up to you, of course. But freedom has two major implications, and that's why I keep talking about the two halves of the first step. The first half of the first step is the bondage of addiction. The second half of the first step is the bondage of self, unmanageability. After step 9, in step 10, at the beginning, Bill says, we enter the world of the spirit. We are placed, hear the grace, we are placed in a position of neutrality with regard to our addiction. That's freedom from the addiction. And later on, he said, we have a daily reprieve, freedom from our unmanageability, freedom from our self-centeredness, freedom from the spiritual malady. But there's a condition there. And the condition is that we commit to and practice and embrace the daily way of life. Step 10, step 11, step 12. Keeping the channel clear. In step 10, spot check inventory. Filling the channel in the morning with grace, with God, with life, with guidance. Step 11, meditation. Inventory at night in step 11 to keep the channel clear. Bill said, inventory and meditation are hand in glove. We need to keep the channel clear so that the channel can be filled with light. We'll stay with that. And then step 12, and practice these principles in all our affairs. Principles. He refers to the steps as principles, as we saw on page 60. These principles are guides to progress, not perfection. Guides to progress, handrails, guardrails, principles. That's why in the back of the Way of Life document, I've attempted to stand on the shoulders of other people who have made lists of principles, and I've wordsmithed them to fit my own knowledge and experience. And you might find that helpful to see what the principles, at least from my perspective, are for each of the steps. The definition of the principle, the description of the action that comes from it, the virtue that it represents, would make a wonderful source of daily meditation for a while. And then make it your own in some way. All right. Page 63. When we sincerely took such a position, I'm a big book literalist and fundamentalist. What are we talking about? Don't just read it and know the words and think you know what he's talking about. What's he talking about? What position? Oh, this relationship with a power other than myself. You might ask yourself even right now, and I will ask you to ask yourself that as part of the assignment going forward for next week. You made a decision about a concept in step two. What concept did you choose, and what is the connotation of that in terms of a relationship? You might have chosen father or mother. Well, then the connotation is parent, a child, a protector, a supporter, a nourisher, a teacher. I used that term teacher or mentor once for my own relationship because I needed more information. I needed knowledge. I needed a guide, a mentor at that particular time in my life. And I chose that. I was there to listen and take direction. Each stage of our life might dictate a different relationship with reality and a different relationship with higher power, with God, as we don't understand it. When we sincerely took this position, that is, made a decision to have a relationship, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Okay, here's now he's going to articulate the third step promises. Right here, he's going to give us the value proposition to try to motivate us that this is a good idea to make this commitment. We had a new employer, so we could just say relationship. We had a new relationship, brand new, or maybe it's just a refurbished and polished relationship. Despite the fact that we've encouraged you to have a set aside attitude, which is the intention of having an open mind and an open heart, it's not a throwaway prayer. So if you have a relationship with a power other than yourself that is totally satisfactory to you, I'm not asking you to throw it away or even set it aside, as long as you've approached it with an open mind and open heart to see if, in fact, you're being invited to an upgrade, a larger concept, a larger expectation, a larger hope. Being all powerful. Well, there you go. Bill is coming from a Christian milieu. Let's be honest. The Oxford Group was started by a Lutheran, and at the time Bill was involved, was being run by Episcopalians. Definitely hardcore Christian, evangelical, Bible reading, Bible following, Ten Commandments, Sermon on the Mount, Eight Beatitudes. That was their grist for their mill. Is that one of your attributes for this power other than yourself, all powerful? God provides what we need. Let's take a look at that. It says God provides what we need. It doesn't say God provides what we want. Bill is fabulous with his accuracy, philosophically, theologically, psychologically. God provides what I need, and there's two conditions here. This paragraph is a meditation, and I'm doing it with you right now. The two conditions are, if I keep close to God and perform God's work well. Well, let's take a look at that. We could run by that and go, yeah, got it. No. God will provide what I need if I keep close to God. Well, what on earth does that mean? How do you keep close to God? Step 11 sounds like that might be the ticket to improve my conscious contact with God. Sounds like the answer to me, prayer and meditation. Well, then we go on to the next phrase, and perform God's work well. What does that even mean? Perform God's work well. What's God's work? Now, every one of you might have a different answer to that. My answer was the same as the Ten Commandments. Basically, to have a contributing relationship with the humanity around me. To have decent relationships as a social being, to contribute to my community, at least not to create any damage. Well, that sounds like step 12, doesn't it? Practicing principles of civilization, of decent human living, carrying the message to other people. What message is that? Oh, that you can have a spiritual awakening. That's the only message that's implied in step 12. There's many interpretations. They're all healthy, they're all fine. My interpretation of step 12 is, it's saying the message that we're carrying is that you can have a spiritual awakening. You can have freedom, freedom from your addiction and freedom from your humanity in the sense of the burden of your bedevilments and your self-centeredness. That's the message, freedom. So let's read it in the context of my interpretation. Being all powerful, God provides what I need if I do step 11 and step 12. That is not a stretch from my standpoint. That's a promise. And when I look back over the 32 years since I did this work, I know the promise has been fulfilled. Sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly. Now, I'm 37 years sober. I didn't do the steps the first 5 years. I was given the grace of abstinence, freedom from alcohol, but I lived in technicolor, those bedevilments, because I was at that time an unrecovered, unconscious narcissist. Because of the step work that has been modified and mitigated, it's never cured. All right, let's go on with the promises. Established on such a footing. Architectural analogy again. This is the foundation. This is the keystone. This is the cornerstone. We became less and less interested in ourselves. Hear the dimmer switch? I had a conversation with somebody the other day who thought the dimmer switch was something negative that you had to deal with because the lights were always going down. That's not the way I use the term dimmer switch. It's the switch that goes up and down. And I don't know what you would call it to connote that it's going up toward the light rather than going down toward the darkness. So I call it the dimmer switch. I think the official electronic name for it is rheostat, but that's just too awkward and clumsy. So I'll continue with the dimmer switch, but the implication of that is that it's we press it on with a little bit of light and a little bit of willingness and a whole lot of grace, and the lights go on. And then with the step work and our shoulder leaning into the dimmer switch, we push that dimmer switch up a notch at a time. And I complicate the metaphor by saying that the dimmer switch is on a trip trigger to go backwards. It is naturally pre-programmed to go backwards, that dimmer switch toward the darkness. Dr. Thibault, the psychiatrist that was instrumental in helping Bill in many different ways back in the, when they were writing the big book. He said, Bill got it right. The first nine steps are for the deflation of the ego at depth. The first nine steps are for the deflation of the ego at depth. He said, he got it right. Absolutely. But the ego has an uncanny way of regenerating itself. And that's why Bill uses the term daily reprieve. We're not cured. And my image is that I lean gently. Now I'll use my hands here. I lean gently into the dimmer switch with my shoulder, with my effort, with my willingness, with my action. And I push it forward one notch at a time. And the lights get a little brighter. And the lights get a little brighter. And the lights get a little brighter. Now, the background to the dimmer switch is that it's an infinite power. It's an infinite light that we're in contact with, and we're becoming more conscious, and therefore there is more light as the dimmer switch goes up a notch at a time. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. So the dimmer switch is giving us a process reprieval here, all right? More and more. Hear the turning. Hear the process, as well as the promises. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Less self-centered, more other-centered, in the healthy sense, not in the codependent sense, in the healthy sense. Establishing our true self in independence, as Claudia, Melody Beattie says, Melody Beattie, when she talks about codependent no more, and the solution is for the individual to become independent, and then for the individual to become interdependent. And she calls the balance between independent and interdependent undependent. It's a brand new word. It didn't catch on, but it's a great word that challenges us to think about. That's the balance of being a decent human being, holding on to yourself, at the same time building healthy relationships with other people. As we felt new power flow in, I've adopted the word flow recently, as I've mentioned many times, for the concept of power, flow with a capital F. Reality is a flow. Life is a flow. Evolution is the flow of life and reality. As we felt new power flow in, process, promise, as we enjoyed peace of mind, beginning to hear the echo of the nine-step promises, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of God's presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. Today, losing the fear of today, losing the fear of tomorrow. But I wonder what he means by losing the fear of the hereafter. Oh, that would be death from my interpretation. I don't have a fear of death. I do have a fear, not overwhelming or blocking me, of the passage from here to there if there's suffering involved. I just don't like suffering. I don't know many people that do. But then a very charismatic term at the end. Look at this phrase he probably picked up from the Oxford group. We were reborn. Now there's a promise. We're given a new life. We're given a new start. In fact, a little bit later on, he says, this is only a beginning. See, that's why I call it the first stage of the rocket launch. Steps 1, 2, and 3, we get in the rocket takes off, and the rocket's going to take us where it takes us. But we know from watching film or documentaries that the people inside, the astronauts, they do a lot of work in there to keep it on path, to communicate about the path, and then once it's in orbit, to keep it adjusted on a daily basis to keep it in orbit. the metaphor is magnificent for us. That second stage being four through seven, steps four through seven, that second stage removing the obstacles in us so that we can have an effective relationship with power and with ourselves. Step one through three is a relationship with power. Steps four through seven is our relationship with ourselves. And then that final stage of the launch into orbit, steps eight and nine, which removes the obstacles in us to our relationship with other people. So we've got the three relationships with power, with ourselves, and with others. And we're in orbit around the light. And we stay in orbit as long as we make those daily adjustments that we talked about. Steps 10, 11, and 12. Bill calls it our way of life. We were reborn. Okay, so now he's going to be very bold here. He's going to give us a prayer. I don't know the origin of the prayer. Maybe by the end of the year I will. I'm beginning to read a book on the construction of the big book. But Bill's prayers have stood up over time, over many people's scrutiny. And in fact, he says in a paragraph down below, I'll read it in a minute, that the wording is quite optional, but this is the one he suggests. As a result of that, the wording is quite optional statement, I've challenged you literally in the instructions to write your own third step prayer. Not to improve the one in the book. That's not my purpose. You might try it. It's your choice. But to understand the one in the book. Because when you have to put your words on paper as synonyms for these words, you have to understand these words. It's a great exercise. I'll do it again in the seven-step prayer. These were wonderful exercises for me that got me underneath the meaning of and the nature of and the phrases and the words. I'm not going to spend any time on the prayer. That's for you to do. If you've done that tonight and we have time, I think we will, you're welcome to read your prayer for us so that we have a sense of what you did, as well as maybe some things, ideas and words that we could use. Many of us said to our maker, so there's the fifth relationship, at least the ones that I've remarked on, creator, in italics, as we understood God. Once again, it's your choice. At the end of the prayer, a little bit down in that paragraph, he says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. He's got a lot of high standards in this section, as I mentioned last week, reminiscent of the absolutes of the Oxford group. He doesn't use that term, the absolutes, but he certainly has that mentality here in the step three, ideals and very high standards. We thought well before we taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to God? Really? No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm ready to do that. Utterly abandon, utterly. The last time I saw utterly is on page 45 in the context of unmanageability. Bill was starting out on step two, we agnostics, but I took a little left turn there. Our human resources as marshaled by the will, this is where Bill is giving us his take on the construction of what makes us human. He talks about the mind and he talks about the will. He's talked about the mind as subject to an obsession, and that's what's wrong with us mentally. And now he's talking about what's wrong with us spiritually. Our will is defective. Our human resources as marshaled by the will were not sufficient. They failed utterly. So as we looked at step one, our will fails utterly. And yet in step two, he asks us to use that will. Oh, but not about our addiction and not about our life and manageability. No, we've already confirmed and got evidence and had an experience, I hope, that my will is ineffective in both of those situations. But on page 53, he asked us for the proper use of our will. God is or God isn't. I can't make a decision about my addiction. I can't make a decision about my unmanageability, but I can make a decision about God or no God. And then I can make a decision with my free will to have a relationship. Despite the smoke and mirrors, because it all sounds smoke and mirrors, but I can have a relationship. And I trust that. And I act as if it's true. We thought well before taking this step. I'm back on page 63. Making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to God. We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as a wife, partner, we would call it today, best friend or spiritual advisor. What a great place, if in fact the word sponsor was in the culture, to use the word sponsor. So apparently the word wasn't in the culture. This is 1939. 12 or so years later on, when the 12 and 12 was published, the word sponsors peppered throughout the 12 and 12 in the step part. So somewhere between 1939 and 1951-53, the word sponsor came into the culture. But here he's saying, take it with somebody. You see, he's very practical. This was, in fact, part of the origin from the six steps of the Oxford group. They had a guide or a mentor or a spiritual advisor that helped them go through their six steps, like Ebby did with Bill on page 13 in Bill's story. And you're welcome to do that with your sponsor and or step guide and or friend, you choose. At any time, you are ready to do that. Next week, after we have some dialogue, we will take it together as a community, and I will introduce you to an approach, a prayer approach that comes out of my monastery background of antiphonal prayer, praying back and forth. I will lead you in the prayer. You don't need to know it. You don't need to read it. You don't need to memorize it. I will lead you in the prayer as a group. We will be unmuted for that. But I will lead you in a way that it won't be chaotic. It won't be cacophony. It will be hopefully a very sacred experience for us. Now, in 1939, there were less than 100 people that had 6 months of sobriety, which they considered to be long-term sobriety. And so Bill adds this next sentence then, but it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. Now, that's just not the case today, no matter what your fellowship is, and especially with the Zoom accessibility. There's plenty of people, maybe not in your fellowship, but probably in your fellowship, that you can take the third step with, if you choose to. As I say, we'll be doing it as a community. The wording, of course, was quite optional. I made reference to that. See, Bill has no rules. You can use this prayer if you want. It's kind of like my set-aside prayer. Well, it's not mine. It was given to me by Joe Hawk, and it was given to him by Don Prince back in the Denver days, back in the 80s. Just a prayer that somebody constructed out of the intent of the words and the principles in the big book about an open mind and an open heart and setting aside prejudice. And it's developed over time. And as I mentioned, I haven't changed the prayer in 20 years, and I have done so this time, and it feels right for me. I hope it works for you. But again, prayer is not about words. Prayer is about intention. What's your intention? I want to have an open mind and an open heart. What's your intention? I have a lot of information, and a lot of it's really credible and really has been helpful. Okay. And some of it hasn't been, but you don't know what has and what hasn't been helpful. And the whole point of the set-aside is I'm trusting that that power that is leading me will open up the curtains or open up the doors or shine the light into the darkness so that I can see what I can't see now, that I can know what I don't know now, and that I can move forward. And I trust that. It's not a throwaway prayer. It's a set aside temporarily for this journey. The wording, of course, is quite optional. So long as we express the idea, voicing it without reservation. Are you kidding? Of course we all have reservation. What does it mean? Saffron robes and a begging bowl in Taiwan? I mean, that would be an old idea of mine going back to the monastery days. No, it doesn't mean anything along that line at all, of course, Herb. But we have these imaginations, these prejudices, these preconceived ideas. What does it mean to turn my will and my life over to the care of God without reservation? Well, take a look. If you have any reservation, you might want to revisit your step two decision. If you have any reservation, the God you chose isn't big enough. If you have any reservations, the God you chose isn't real enough. If you have any reservations, you're not trusting that power other than yourself. And it might be all you can do is to be willing, to trust and not have any real certitude or any real feeling about it. And so I'm willing to have no reservations while I have reservations, and meanwhile, I'll take the actions anyway. I have reservations, but I'll take the actions anyway. That's what step two is all about, isn't it? That willingness, he said on page 47, that is the cornerstone. This was only a beginning. Remember, I suggested when Bill said on page 63 that we were reborn. That's a new beginning, and he says it right here. This is only a beginning, this prayer. Though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. Some people have an experience with it. Some people don't. Some people have a big one. Some people have a little one. It doesn't matter about the experience. It's just what is. I was sitting with a fellow named Kevin. And he was 24 years old. At the time, he was 24 years old. And this was his eighth treatment center. I was asked to come in as a spiritual sort of help to help the patients understand this process. And I said, I'm one-on-one with him, and I could see the defiance and the hostility. He's 24 years old, his eighth treatment center inpatient. And so he had told me very clearly he doesn't want to talk about anything to do with 12-step, with spirituality, with God, or with meetings, or with sponsorship. Oh, okay, you set the rules. So I said a quiet little prayer, a little 30-second quiet time as we were sort of like looking at each other, that I needed guidance because that's the only vocabulary I have at that time. And I said, so Kevin, do you believe in a life force in this universe, something that is underneath all of this energy that's happening with universes and worlds and spinning and all of that? Do you believe in a life force? Yeah, there's something that we don't know about, but there's certainly an energy in the universe. I said, okay, so there is this life force. And do you believe that you have free will? And he goes, well, yeah, I can leave anytime. I have free will. I can quit anytime, and I make a decision to start anytime. He obviously didn't understand addiction, but I didn't go there because I got another agenda. So you believe in this life force and you believe that you have free will, But you see that you've used your free will to go against the life force because you're in a death spiral. This is your eighth treatment center. You can't seem to get it right. You can't seem to control your life. You can't seem to deal effectively with your addiction nor with your life. You agree that you're really going against the motion here? He said, well, yeah, I can. So the whole point of recovery is to find a way to turn, this is it, to be in alignment with the life force. I'm not turning my will and my life over to the life force. I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of the life force. And then I use the term GPS. Do you know what a GPS is? And he's, well, yeah, of course. I have one in my car. I have one on my phone. I said, okay. So when you get in your car, whose car is it? Oh, it's your car. Do you have a driver? Yeah, I have a driver's license. Do you have insurance? Yeah, I have insurance. Do you know how to drive? Yeah. Do you have the keys? Yeah. Is it full of gas? Yeah, I've taken care of that. Do you know how to drive? Yeah. Well, when you get in your car, do you know where you're going? Well, I have the address, but I don't know where I'm going. Oh, so what do you do? He said, I put the address in the GPS. Oh, then what do you do? Well, then I follow direction. Oh, yeah, that's it. So consider this life force as the GPS that you need to listen to and follow direction. We left it at that. He went out, came back. Next week, I'm with him, and he talked differently. He just talked differently. And I knew, I said, Kevin, there's something that's happened here. I said, what is it? He said, I got tired of suffering. I could see doing my autobiography. I got tired of suffering. I'm done. I'm done with suffering. I said, well, then what happened? He said, I quit resisting. I said, oh, okay. Then what happened? I was willing to take direction. There it is. He was willing to take direction. I'm not turning my will and my life over to God to become one with. I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of God, like the GPS. And I listen to the direction. And in step 10, when I'm disturbed because I've gone against the life force, the principles, dishonesty or resentment or secrets or inappropriate sexual behavior, my emotions will tell me, my conscience will tell me, and I need to make a course correction and to be in alignment with the life force. And so I'm going to go back to my slides now, just because they were built this way and I'm proud of them. This is an illustration of that. My self-will goes against the life force. I call it higher power here. And the whole point of step 3 is to make a decision to be in alignment with. That's why I use the word alignment. And my life is committed to being in alignment. In the morning, I sit in guidance so that I will be in alignment. During the day, if I'm out of alignment, I will be disturbed, meaning I will have an emotion that's negative. I will have an awareness that something's amiss. Bill said it in the 12 and 12. Whenever we're disturbed, there's something wrong with us. Whenever we're disturbed, that's a broad catch-all phrase for the step 10 inventory. Disturbed. The step 4 inventory in the big book uses 4 categories: resentment, fear, and sex. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. But the step 10 uses a catch-all phrase, disturbed. Whenever I'm disturbed, I'm out of alignment with reality. See, there's pathetic Herbie. I didn't know I was an alcoholic until I realized I was a story and a process that took too long. And then I got into AA and I spent 4 years in AA. It took too long, a story for a different day. But I was in the bondage of self. Alcohol had been removed. I was given the gift of sobriety without even asking for it. I have had no inclination for alcohol since the first day of my sobriety. And I didn't go to AA for 3 months after that first day of sobriety. I quit because the hospital asked me to quit to support my wife's recovery. But at 4 or 5 years of sobriety, I did these steps and I saw that I was in the bondage of self. And then I went through the steps 3 different times with 3 different step guides over about a 10-year period. And I got free. But notice, the cartoon image is literally the same from a pathetic Herbie standpoint. But really, Herbie doesn't realize that there's no ceiling, no walls, and no floor, as long as he's holding the bars in front of his face. This reinforces what Bill says on page 62. Our troubles are of our own making. And I needed to learn that I had bars in front of my face through which I was looking, thinking I was a victim. And through this process of discovery and action in steps 4 through 9, I was able to have those bars dissolve and or removed. The step 3 is a decision for a relationship and an alignment with that relationship. An interesting comment, at least from my standpoint, interesting. The step 3 prayer does not have an amen at the end of it. That may or may not intrigue you, but it intrigued me at some point as I was doing this work, probably the 3rd time I was doing this work. All prayers that I know of have an amen. It means so be it. The prayer is done. We've completed our petition or our thanksgiving or our worship, whatever it is. Amen. So be it. That's literally the translation. So why doesn't the 3rd step prayer have an amen? Well, I don't know. I've never read anything about it. I've never heard Bill talk about it. But my speculation is Bill said it's a beginning. It's not an end. It's the opening volley. And we do steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 to remove the obstacles in us that block us from that power and block us from ourselves. And then we pray a prayer at the end of step 7, ominously starting my creator. In step 6, I see that I'm a mess and I need to be rebuilt. I need to be remanufactured. I need to be recreated. And I address my creator. And that prayer, the 7-step prayer, has an amen. So that stage is a stage of establishing a relationship with myself through the power that's in me, that starts with the commitment to do that step, those steps, in step 3, the beginning. So I found that an interesting take on it. I hope it's of some value to you. Bill said on page 55, with this attitude, you cannot fail. Step 2. With this attitude, and then I defined attitude by what he has already set up above that, that we need to think honestly and search fearlessly and search diligently. Not in the sense of a perfectionist, but just we do the best we can. It took me 3 journeys through the steps with 3 very competent people over a 10-year period, from my standpoint, to have the full experience of each of the steps. And different experiences with each of the steps at different journeys. I'll talk about my step 3 experience next week. Alignment is the word I use. You could use a word like parallel or harmony or conform. Those were synonyms, but I like the word alignment. It just has an action component to it. Step 3 is not surrender. Step 3 is not passive. From my standpoint, it's a ferocious act of my will, a ferocious act of my will to turn and to commit to turn and to commit to do steps 4 through 9. Takes every ounce of energy I have and commitment to do those steps, not only because it takes time, but because it's really painful in the sense of seeing the truth of the lie. I thought I was a Renaissance man until I did the 4th step. Then I realized I was a Neanderthal. It was very embarrassing. All right. So what I'd like to do now is to have some dialogue with you about any questions, observations, experiences, resistances. Oh, and before we do that, finished assignment 9, whatever that means for you. And mostly what it means for me is finishing by at least meditating on the prayer, the step 3 prayer on page 63, perhaps even writing your own prayer on page 60, from page 63. And if you want to share it, you're welcome to, but I have no rules about any of this. And so you're welcome to do that. But pay attention to the specific directions on assignment 9. And then you might, let's see. Yeah, you might also, because I'll begin giving a small introduction to step 4 next week toward the end of the workshop. So you might want to take a look at the beginnings of assignment 10, where we're going to be starting to list our resentment. So I would say read pages 63, the bottom of 63, all of 64 and 65. Just read and pay attention. I'm not asking you to do any writing or any, no. Just pay attention, because I'm going to give the initial step 4 assignment next week, and I will be unpacking pages 63 and 64. I'm not sure if I'll go into page 65 or not. So we will begin doing the step 4 work next, by the end of the workshop next week.
When somebody, especially the person in my home, is continually misbehaving and acting out with attitude and all of the above.
Yeah.
And I don't react 95% of the time, but a couple of times I do. It's just, they just keep going and blaming. And
then we got the situation. What's your question?
Yeah. Well, what do you do? I mean, my goodness, you know.
How's your Al-Anon program?
It's good. I haven't been going, but.
So you don't have one.
Well, not anymore. No, but there's a lot of other things I do. I mean, I go to study twice a week.
You missed the point. I wasn't being critical.
No, I get it.
Al-Anon is about how you deal with people who have problems. I wonder what it means. Wait. I don't want the story, because we already know more than we need to know. All right? We already do. All right? You've been very clear about that. I wonder what it means in the 12 and 12. Whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me. I'm not here to solve your problem. I am just saying it is your problem. Your reaction is your problem 100% of the time. All right? So deal with it. Find a way to deal with it. Okay. Either resolve the misbehavior or get a better attitude about it. I mean, So... I'm going to cut you no slack here. All right.
That's okay. I'm good with that.
Yeah, because, and this is really where the rubber meets the road. I mean, where people talk about the story, life is hard. The road less traveled, the very first line. Life is difficult. Yes, it is. Absolutely.
So one last question. You mentioned earlier that you, the first 3 years of your sobriety, many moons ago, you were, a unrecovered, unconscious narcissist.
Yes.
So how do I live with that? How do I live with that person?
Well, there's a book called The Object of My Reflection. Excuse me. The Object of My Affection is in My Reflection. And it's How to Live with a Narcissist. I recommend it.
So I remember I talked to you yesterday about some resistance I was feeling about turning my will over to God. And you said that's not what it says.
Right.
But then on page 60, that's exactly what it says.
I know, but the step doesn't say that. I know. I said it in my comments. I don't know why Bill left out the word God.
Okay. Charity.
I don't know why he did that, but the step itself is what I focus on.
Okay. So you said you were going to explain what the care of meant, and I don't feel like I got it. So can you be more specific?
All right. So the GPS didn't help you?
If I thought a GPS was caring, maybe, but.
Wait. What does caring mean? It supported me in what I wanted to get done.
Okay, so care, support, that's another word.
Yeah.
So supporting your goals or supporting your better.
It's what I wanted to do. Okay. I got support. If I listened to it, if I didn't follow the direction, of course, then
okay.
Then I would have, yeah, had some.
That's more helpful. And then, you know, I think still some resistance, because when I read words, like you said, abandoned ourselves utterly and without reservation, a lot of those, they just like get your hackles up. It's like, I can't go there. Yet.
Well, no, but I made that comment. I can't do that.
Yeah.
No, I literally cannot do that. Now I said, though, using the set aside attitude, I said, I'm willing to be taken to a place of approximation.
Yes, yes. And that was helpful to me too, because I can't go there either. And then my other question is, you know, my perception of God is very much like yours. It's a flow, it's an energy, it's very immaterial.
Oh, yes.
So the idea of having a relationship with it, it's hard. So
how about a relationship with life or a relationship with reality? Relationship meaning that I'm acknowledging life and reality, and my relationship is I'm going to pay attention to try to be objective, that I'm not going to impose my story and my script on how life should be or how people should be.
So like the father, child, all those relationships, what would be your role, you know, in that dichotomy, or that if flow is the God for you, what would your role be?
My role is to acknowledge the flow and to be in the flow and not go against the flow.
So a participant, melting, you know, all those other things had the employer, the employee, the father. Right.
No, and in the beginning, I chose father. That was my very first relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I chose mentor guide.
So I don't know if what I'm asking is clear, but you know.
But it's a question you have to ask yourself. What relationship?
I'm asking your experience. Like, if flow is your higher power, then what is you? You know, you are the flowy. You are the.
Well, I don't have to think about that. I'm in the flow. I'm part of the flow.
You're a swimmer in the flow.
Quite frankly, I do not do a dualistic thought.
Okay.
I do not have a dualistic attitude.
And that might be my problem, because I don't either.
This is going to sound a little strange, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've never said it before, but I really hear your question. All right. This is what you see is God manifesting as Herb.
Yes. That's exactly what I think.
All right.
That's why I can't get the duality. So there isn't.
It's a subtlety until it's not subtle.
Gotcha. Okay. That's why I'm struggling, because it isn't possible with the way I think it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Herb. Yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
I do have a prayer for step 3.